Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Lace. It was so valuable in the late 1700s that you could use it like money. Now imagine 600 women, men, children in Ipswich making it at home. They became an economic engine, but are now mostly a part of Massachusetts' hidden history. Joining us now, two people working to bring lace making back to life. Catherine Chasen is the curator at the Ipswich Museum, and Mary Mangin makes lace and is a member of the New England Lace Group. Catherine and Mary, welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Great to have you here in studio, too. I'm going to start right off with a little bit of sound for us. This is the sound of bobbin lace being made.
Okay, now I'm over to this side, so I'm going to do the full stitch with a twist. We're going to... Whoa! I pulled too aggressively.
So, Catherine of the Ipswich Museum, I watched this video earlier, and it's incredible because, okay, try to picture this. It's like if you see somebody shuffling through a box of sticks, like it looks like they're looking for something, right? I'm moving this one. I'm shuffling stuff all around. But instead of it being random, lace is actually coming out of the other end of the sticks. It's
yes,
crazy.
It really is.
It's really complex.
It's
tell
very
us.
Complex. The day I started working at the Ipswich Museum, they tried to teach me, and I made them not, basically. But these ladies who do it, Mary is one of them, they're able to take these combinations of the wooden bobbins and make these beautiful creations that you see in front of you in the studio out of this complicated process. It's like a card dealer who's able to just do it without thinking.
It does kind of look like shuffling cards, Mary.
It does, but it's really actually only two basic movements. There's a cross and a twist, like knit and purl a little bit, in if you're familiar with knitting at all. But it's the combination of those that creates the lovely patterns that we get as we make a larger piece of lace.
How long did it take you to learn, to get good at it?
Oh, to get good at it. Well, I'm not even good at it yet. I started in 2019. I took the basic introductory workshop. So this is luckily before the pandemic, because it was a great pandemic hobby. But I learned to make Ipswich lace during the pandemic. Lace makers have now adapted to Zoom, and so we're taking a lot of classes on Zoom now.
And so you brought us a sample, or
that's
a
right,
couple samples. So is this your lace?
This is all of my lace, yes.
So it's this beautiful black...
silk.
Can you call it fabric? Do you call lace fabric?
It's a textile.
Okay, so beautiful black textile. It's silk, and it's got like a little diamond pattern in it and a weave with an edging. And is this representative, Catherine, of what would have been Ipswich lace?
Yes. Mary made this from a pattern that was created from samples of Ipswich lace that are found in Alexander Hamilton's papers at the Library of Congress.
So I want to pick up on that a little bit because, of course, I'm sure people are saying, I'm sorry, where did Alexander Hamilton come into this? So... Karen Thompson, who works with New England Lace Group and was the first person to really dig deep into the history of Ipswich lace, found samples of the lace in Alexander Hamilton's papers, recreating and was working on recreating those patterns. We spoke with her about those papers and the significance of them. Let's hear a little bit of that.
So very rarely do we have a collection of lace, and I've studied many collections of lace, that we know exactly when and where they were made. We have some from war laces in Belgium during World War I, but from the early laces, it's very rare to have that much information. With these 22 samples at the Library of Congress, among Alexander Hamilton's papers, you know, we know exactly when and where they were made.
Why does Alexander Hamilton have 22 samples of Ipswich lace in his papers?
Well, Alexander Hamilton, when he was the Treasury Secretary, was very interested in the fledgling industries in America, and as such asked his contacts throughout America to collect data. And one of those industries happened to be the Ipswich cottage lace industry. So George Cabot talked to Reverend Joseph Dana of Ipswich, and he spent a year going from household to household, looking at what lace was being made, talking to the people who were making it, and collecting the statistics on it, along with the samples that were sent to Alexander Hamilton.
So cottage, when you say that, you really mean home-based, Catherine.
Correct.
Not tiny, because this was a significant piece of industry for Ipswich in the late 1700s.
If there were 601 households in Ipswich, there were over 600 lace makers in Ipswich. So that means that probably every single household was participating in this industry in some way, shape, or form.
So you're with the Ipswich Museum. You're the curator there. Why? What do we know about why so many people in one community in Massachusetts were making this thing that was valuable at the time called lace?
The why is a little bit of a mystery. We're not really sure who or what caused Ipswich to start making lace. Probably someone brought a pillow over from England and eventually taught everyone. But we do know why, and it's because you can trade lace for goods that were needed. They say that 1 yard of lace could be equivalent to a quart of wood or 16 pounds of sheep's wool. And so to produce this lace really gave Ipswich residents some economic certainty and freedom that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
So Mary Mangin, you're a lace maker. You've picked up these traditions from Ipswich patterns drawn from Alexander Hamilton samples. I guess I'm assuming that at the time, so we have this thing, this silk woven or sewn into a textile that becomes as valuable as a currency. I guess I'm assuming that, like gold might be more valuable than silver, there might be different kinds of laces that were more or less valuable. Am I making that up in my head, or is that true?
Oh, certainly. There are different groups around the world who made lace. The European laces were very highly favored, and they were very fine and refined. The American laces, although they were some of them look very similar to some of the European laces, it's not quite the same technique. And during the American Revolutionary War, though, you have to imagine that the importation of lace became problematic for a number of reasons. And so this would give a boost to the local lace makers who might be interested in creating this.
So, Mary, no offense to lace, but you can't cook with it. You can't use it as your whole garment. It doesn't you clean with it or some of the other things you might do with a textile. Why was it so valuable?
Well, some of these women were able to pay tuition for their children at one of the local schools with the lace, and as well as trade it. We have ledgers of merchant ledgers that show that some of the women were trading for other goods from that as well.
So, Catherine, was it a symbol of status to have lace? Is that why it was
yes.
so valuable?
So lace was a way to show your wealth, basically, and you could kind of evaluate one's costume by the type of lace that they were wearing. And so wearing lace was a status symbol.
Is that why we see so much of it in paintings and portraits of people at that time?
Correct. You see it sewn onto collars and cuffs that were removable so that they could move them from outfit to outfit as need be. Lace was willed down in to daughters, to sons, things like that. Both men and women wore lace as well.
So I'm sorry. So it was basically bling.
Yes.
All right. So we have the bling of the 1700s.
Yes.
It's being made in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Mary, why did it become important to you to be one of the people in our community who carries this art form forward?
I came to lace because I was working as a docent at one of the local Revolutionary War sites in the city of Somerville. I work at the old powder house, and I became interested in the clothing of the period, and that's when I was led to some of the interesting clothing details, and one of them was lace, and I began to understand the importance of lace in the significance of wealth in this time period, and the fact that women who were not wealthy women were making this for the wealthy women. So there's an interesting dynamic there as well. So I was interested in maintaining this craft and helping to promote it and raise the profile of these women who did all this work all those years ago.
Yeah, Catherine Chasen, who's the curator at the Ipswich Museum, I mean, that is hanging out there, right? We're talking about an industry that kept 600 people working, that made Ipswich a bit of a lace powerhouse, but we also know that so much of what we thought we knew about economies at that time are roiled in enslaved labor and discriminatory economies. So who made the lace in the late 1700s?
So pretty much in Ipswich, if you were a female or not able-bodied man or woman, you could be making lace. So that means you're elderly. Be it a male or a female, could make lace. A small boy could be making lace, but it was being made mainly by women. But, you know, I do want to add in the fact that while it was predominantly women, the younger men and the more elderly gentlemen were participating as well. So if you weren't able-bodied, it was a way that you could bring in income to your household that other communities didn't have that option.
And do we have eyes into any relationship between enslavement and lace making?
So unfortunately, our record books don't detail that the lace that was being traded into account books necessarily were made by slaves. But we do know that Ipswich residents owned slaves, and it's very conceivable that they were also involved in the lace making industry. Unfortunately, textiles tend to be not an attributed product. So like many women's labors, they go unsigned. And so we can't tell you necessarily who made which piece of lace. And that leaves a lot of questions out there.
Mary, I'll come back to you. Why is it important to preserve? I mean, there are patterns. I'm looking at you have an actual pattern on the table here. It looks quite large. I was looking at it. It's diamond sort of in a zigzag. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, wait, that's an enlarged version of the tiny little diamonds I saw on the piece of lace that you handed me at the beginning of our conversation. Why is it so important to bring these patterns, this skill, this tradition forward today? We don't use a lot of lace today.
Right. Well, we want to celebrate the work of these women and their artistry. And we also want to remember that this kind of work went on. But there's also a lot of information to be gleaned from the material culture of the time. And I think that people, when they see us making lace, they start to think more about how that was done, who did that. And it also points us to possible new resources that we might find around New England. We hope that there's people who around New England who will remember that this lace existed and find it in their archives.
Well, one of the things that you did was teach us that there is a community in New England called Lace Talk. That's a community of lace makers on TikTok. We pulled a little bit of that content to hear.
So do you want to know how this mess of thread becomes this lace brooch?
I just completed my very first bobbin lace project.
I have been working on lace making for a while now, and I just want to make something I can actually wear.
How much lace do I have, you ask?
Well, you see, my friend, your question is poorly worded.
I am Mr. Spitz, a lace maker.
3.6 million views under the hashtag lacemaking. As a lacemaker, what does it mean for you to see? I mean, I think it's fair to say, but looks like the beginning of an actual movement on social media among young people to take up this hundreds of years old craft.
There's a great energy around lace making right now. And I was mentioning to Catherine in the other room, too, that there's also some designers who are starting to use handmade lace and specializing in providing information about these lace makers who make these crafts in Italy. And so I hope that there's a revival of lace around the world and young people are interested in making it. It's really engaging. It's mentally engaging because you have to think through these patterns very carefully. But it's also just really lovely when you get a piece at the end.
So, Catherine, there are two questions sort of lurking in the back of my head. First, you pointed out most of the lace makers were women, children, and the phrase was able-bodied. No, the opposite.
Yes.
Men. That is partly because we were in a context of war.
We were in a context of war, but also we lived at a time where a lot of physical labor was required to produce everything that we needed on a day-to-day basis, from farming to creating the wood that we needed to fuel things, just a lot of physical labor. We created everything we consumed.
Chris, what's in the back of my mind is that the women were doing all of that, right? Making the bread, cooking the food all day, tending to the animals, but also making this lace.
Correct. They were squeezing it in their spare time.
All right. Remarkable. And the other thing that comes to mind is sooner or later, at some point, lace stopped being
Correct.
So valuable. Why?
Part of it was changing fashion. So as lace started to fall out of fashionable periods, it was not as required or valuable, but also was the advent of Industrial Revolution. Eventually, lace started to be made on machines. So this ground that you see, this netting, the basic netting, could be produced on a machine. And then only a few women were required to kind of embroider the same design.
To put the fancy patterns over the basic pattern.
Yes. So the lace industry in Ipswich really kind of fell in the 1820s when this machine-made net appeared on the market and started to lower the prices, and it was no longer economically viable for them to continue to make it.
So very briefly, what then happened to Ipswich?
Well, Ipswich was bypassed as a port town, and we lost the lace industry, so it became kind of a sleepy little town. We eventually did get some industries back. The upside to that is today today we have this wonderful preserved tradition that might not have survived if Ipswich had continued to become a more vibrant town.
All right. Catherine Chasen is the curator at the Ipswich Museum, and Mary Mangin is a lace maker and member of the New England Lace Group. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And listen, the idea for this segment of Hidden History came from our texting group. Do you have a piece of Massachusetts history that you think we should know about? Do you just want to be in dialogue with us here at Radio Boston? If so, we'd like you to join our texting group. And to do that, you get started by texting the word Boston to 617-766-0382. I'll say that for you again. Text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. 0382.